Talking about weather is a favorite Iowa pastime. Today, we'll get the stories behind the words we use when we talk about weather. It's Talk of Iowa from Iowa Public Radio. I'm Charity Nebbe. English language expert Patricia O'Connor will be here today. She's the author of Woe Is I and a number of other best-selling books about the English language. She blogs at grammarphobia.com. We'll start today with the word that we just can't stop talking about this summer, drought. Or is it drouth? We'll also talk about derecho, an interesting weather phenomenon and a word with a fascinating history, and the weather words you want to talk about. Join our conversation after the news. It's Talk of Iowa from Iowa Public Radio. Good morning. I'm Charity Nebbe. My guest today is English language expert Patricia O'Connor. She is the author of Woe Is I and a number of other best-selling books about the English language. She also blogs at grammarphobia.com. And today we're going to talk about words we use often in Iowa, words about weather. Hello, Pat.
Hi, how are you?
Great. Thank you so much for being here today.
My pleasure.
And of course, as you know, growing up in Iowa, we do love to talk about weather because it's important to us. And this summer, we just can't stop talking about weather because it's so incredibly hot. And of course, we're in the midst of the worst drought we've had in 60 years. And drought is a word that we are using a lot, but some of us say it a little bit differently. We also hear people say drouth. So before we talk about the origin of that word, can you clarify the pronunciation?
Well, unfortunately, I can't, because there are two pronunciations, and they're both correct. This is a story. Drought, the word, is more than 1,000 years old. It goes way, way back into the depths of Old English, and it comes from old Germanic sources. In fact, it belongs to prehistory. It existed in ancient Indo-European, which is a language that the Germanic and the Latinate families of languages came from. And the word drought in Old English was something like druggeth. And as the word developed, it actually became two words. There were two separate words for it. It was spelled D-R-O-U-G-H-T, pronounced drought, and it was also written D-R-O-U-T-H and pronounced drouth. So we actually have both words. If you look it up in the dictionary, you'll find drought, also drouth. And drought, the one with G-H-T, is pronounced as if it ends with a T. And the one without the G-H is pronounced as if it ends in T. Both have coexisted for centuries. Now, today, drought is the much more common spelling and pronunciation, but drouth is perfectly correct.
Okay, so when people are saying drouth, they're actually spelling it a different way?
Yes. There are two spellings and two pronunciations. So if you're writing it as D-R-O-U-G-H-T, you should properly be saying drought. But if you write it as D-R-O-U-T-H, the pronunciation is drouth.
Okay. I don't think I've seen it in print as drouth ever.
Yeah, if you look it up, you'll find it. I'm looking at the fifth edition of the American Heritage Dictionary, and it has both words and both pronunciations. But this is not unusual in English. We have another set of words that follows much the same pattern. Our word height. It actually began as height. And for a long time, we had two different words, height and height. And now we have just one word spelled height, H-E-I-G-H-T. But many people do pronounce it height.
Yes.
As though it were spelled high with the T-H at the end. It's the same pattern with the T versus the T-H ending.
That's so interesting. And it's just interesting how it can stick around like that.
Yes. And the word drought actually developed from a much older adjective, dry. And in fact, when it first came along, it meant dryness. it was a noun for the from the adjective. It meant dryness.
Well, and that is certainly what it still means.
Absence of moisture. And sometimes, you know, blue skies are not good news.
Right.
Right.
Oh, how very interesting. Well, we will talk about many other weather words today. We also want to give you an opportunity to get in on the conversation at 866-780-9100. You can tweet us at IPR Talk. You can also send email to talkofiowa@iowapublicradio.org. And Pat, the next word we're going to talk about is derecho. And it's a word I never heard when I was growing up. If there were these straight-line wind phenomenon, I heard that they were straight-line winds.
Right.
But
well,
it's not
there's
new.
There's a reason you haven't heard of it. And none of us did, except for some research meteorologists, perhaps, because the word was just revived in common usage this summer. In fact, only a little over a month ago.
Well, I heard it last summer as well. We had the same phenomenon here in Iowa last summer, and there was one in Michigan shortly before that, and that was the first time I had heard it. So I think it's over the last couple of years.
Right. Actually, a derecho, as you said, it's a weather term for winds that blow straight ahead, as opposed to a tornado, which has circular winds. And derecho is from Spanish, in which it means both straight and it means right. But in this case, it means straight. And the word tornado is also from Spanish. And the derecho was actually deliberately coined from a Spanish term as an analog to tornado.
Okay, and who coined that term?
Well, it was coined by a University of Iowa professor in the 19th century, and this is a very interesting story. And I'll start at the beginning because it's really quite fascinating, and this is a very interesting Iowa character, and character with a capital C. His name was Gustavus Heinrichs, H-I-N-R-I-C-H-S, and he was born in 1836 in Holstein, Germany, which was then part of Denmark. And he trained at the University of Copenhagen, and he emigrated to the United States and settled in Davenport, where he first taught foreign languages in the local schools. And then the next year, he moved to the University of Iowa, and he initially taught modern languages, and soon after that was appointed professor of physics, because that was really what his training was in. Now, while he was a professor of physics at Iowa, he promoted the Iowa City as the location for the state's medical college, which, as we know, did come to pass. And at this time, there was a big post-Civil War interest in science. Now, he came to the university in 1862, I believe. And when the university was reorganized in 1865, because of this post-Civil War interest in science, the sciences had a boom in funding, in interest, and the humanities really were relegated to second place for a long time. And Heinrichs, while he was at Iowa, became interested in weather, and he actually set up the first State Weather Service reporting program. That was in Iowa in 1875. And he set up the first weather station. His first observatory was located at the corner of Church and Clinton Streets in Iowa City. And later it was at what is now the University of Iowa President's residence. And he had another observatory on the top of his barn, which was at Capitol and Market Streets, and he had a weather station on top of his house. And he organized a network of hundreds of volunteers throughout the state to send him measurements of rainfall, observations on wind, all kinds of observations, and he analyzed this weather data and wrote it up into monthly reports during the 1870s and 80s. Now, meanwhile, back in Washington, the U.S. Army Signal Corps, which was then in charge of weather programs, had begun a Tornado Studies Program in an attempt to learn more about tornadoes and how to predict them. And there was a man in charge of that program named Finley, who was an Army man. And he worked up a lot of observations on tornadoes in the Midwest, including Kansas, Iowa, Nebraska, and so on. Now, Gustavus Hinrichs, who was, I have to say it, he was sort of an obnoxious person. He was very difficult to get along with. He was abrasive and whatnot. And he was a genius, but many geniuses are very volatile and abrasive and hard to get along with. Well, when he read Finley's studies on tornadoes, he got very upset because in analyzing the data, he realized that many of the storms that were called tornadoes that had happened in Iowa and that he had observed were not actual tornadic activity. He felt that those were straight-on, straight-ahead winds. And so a controversy developed between the tornado faction and Hinrichs, who observed these as a straight-ahead wind phenomenon. And he coined the term derecho, Spanish for direct or straight ahead, to define these events. As an analog to tornado, which is of Spanish origin and means circular winds, so he had disputes going on all over the place. He was fighting with the weather observers in Washington. He was fighting with the University of Iowa, other faculty members, and the university president, because later on there was an increased interest in humanities and those fields as opposed to science, and he started losing some of his funding.
So were people fighting with him because they didn't believe that there was this weather phenomenon?
Yes, they didn't believe in derechos. They thought these were tornadoes. So his term, derecho, pretty much died out after the 1880s. Now, it was rediscovered. He was very scientific about his term. He delivered it at a meeting in Minneapolis of the American Association for the Advancement of Science. He wrote papers about it, including a very famous one in the American Meteorological Journal called Tornadoes and Derechos. So it was established in the scientific vocabulary, but people lost interest in it. He was fired from the university for general obstreperousness and moved on to St. Louis, and he became interested in other things. He was also a chemist, and he actually invented an embalming fluid, among other things. I don't want to get too much off the track. But
well, and we do need to take a break, so in a moment we'll find out how this term came back into usage. My guest is Patricia O'Connor. She's an English language expert, author of Woe Is I and a number of other best-selling books about the English language. Her blog can be found at grammarphobia.com, and you're welcome to join the conversation. This is Talk of Iowa from Iowa Public Radio. It's Talk of Iowa from Iowa Public Radio. I'm Charity Nebbe. My guest is Patricia O'Connor. She's the author of several best-selling books about the English language and is the proprietress of the website grammarphobia.com, where you can read all kinds of interesting things about many, many words and phrases that we use. Today, we're talking about weather words, and you're welcome to join our conversation with your questions at 866-780-9100. You can tweet us at IPR Talk. You can also send email to talkofiowa@iowapublicradio.org. You can also share your language pet peeves as well. 866-780-9100 is the number to call. And we were talking about the term derecho, which is a term for a straight wind phenomenon, very strong straight winds, and everyone in Vinton and many other places in Iowa are very familiar with this phenomenon after last summer. And it was actually a term, as you told us, Pat, invented by a professor at the University of Iowa. So he was fired from the university. His term fell out of use. Mm-hmm. How did it get rediscovered?
Well, it became largely unknown for more than 100 years. But in the last couple of decades, it started cropping up again in scientific writings. And there were a couple of storms in the 1990s, I think, that were referred to as derechos, but it's sort of obscure. I mean, not everybody called them that, and there were only one or two mentions. But the word really popped into prominence after the June 29th storm on the East Coast, which it went through the mid-Atlantic states and killed 22 people and left 4 million people without power. And that's when the newspapers started saying, hey, what does derecho mean? And there were articles about it and all this. And most dictionaries don't have the word in it. The OED doesn't have the word.
They probably will soon, though.
Oh, I'm sure they will. Right. But today, the National Oceanic and Atmospheric Administration has a very nice page on derechos with its history and everything. It's all of a sudden it's been reestablished, which would have been a vindication of old Gustav Henricks.
Right. Well, it's interesting. Of course, derecho was his response to the word tornado, because tornado
yes.
also came from Spanish. Why do we use the term tornado?
Well, actually, tornado is a sort of a mistake. Our word tornado actually comes from the Spanish word tronado, which means storm, and it's spelled T-R-O-N-A-D-O, tronado. But the spelling got switched around because of confusion with another Spanish word, tornado, which means turned. So if we were more correct in our enunciation, we'd all be saying tronado instead of tornado, but tornado is easier to spell.
Well, and that works out here in Iowa as well.
Right.
We've got Nevada, we've got Buena Vista.
Right.
We like to change things a little
sure.
bit.
Madrid.
For our own purposes, exactly.
Yeah, right.
All right, well, I'm talking to Patricia O'Connor. We've been talking about weather words. We're going to keep talking about weather words, but we'll also talk about your English language pet peeves or your weather word questions as well. The number to call is 866-780-9100. You can tweet us at IPR Talk. You can also send email to talkofiowa@iowapublicradio.org. And Dave from Norwalk called a little while ago, and he wants to know about the word zephyr. Do you know about the word zephyr?
I don't. I think it means a breeze.
Right,
a
light wind or a west wind.
But, okay. I can actually look up its etymology here because I have my handy etymology. Let's see. But it's always awkward to look things up while you're on the
sure.
radio. okay, zephyr. Yes, it originally meant a west wind. It was used in Chaucer. It was zephyrous. From Old English about the year 1000, borrowed from Latin zephyrus, from the Greek zephyros, the west wind.
All right.
Okay, all right. The spelling zephyr was first recorded in late 16th century, zephyr. I think it's a pretty word when you see it written.
Certainly.
Zephyr.
Yeah, very evocative.
Yes.
We were talking about derecho and tornado both being words that came from Spanish, although
mm-hmm.
tornado not directly from Spanish. But mm-hmm. there's another not just a word. We've got an article with it, too. But we talk
mm-hmm.
about El Nino all the time now.
Sure.
The Southern Oscillation Index and El
uh-huh.
Nino and La
oh, yeah.
Nina. Where did that usage originate?
Well, the term El Nino was given to this weather phenomenon by Latin American fishermen who observed it. And it always happened around Christmas time, so they called it El Nino, which means the little boy, and by implication it means the Christ child. So it's called El Nino because of its timeliness around the Christmas season. But what it is, it's a periodic warming of the surface of the Pacific. And the opposite and coupled phenomenon, the cooling, is called La Nina. And these are actually paired phenomena. They work together, El Nino and La Nina, to affect Pacific jet stream winds, and they create severe and unusual weather patterns, droughts, storms, floods, and whatnot. So that's where those come from.
All right. Spanish. And it was just because it seemed to be around Christmas time.
Yes, yes.
Very interesting.
And another Spanish weather word, of course, is hurricane. It was first recorded in the 16th century, and it comes from a Spanish word, huracan, H-U-R-A-C-A-N, I may not be pronouncing it correctly, which was borrowed by the Spanish from a word spoken by the Arawak Indians in the West Indies, and their word was huracan, and it's thought that the modern spelling with two R's may have been influenced by the spelling of the word hurry, since there's an urgency and a flustering about
Certainly, this word.
So that's another Spanish word for weather.
Oh, interesting. Dave is on the line from Des Moines. Hi, Dave.
Hello.
Hi, what's your question?
Well, I just wanted to bring up a pet peeve, which is that
sure.
I hear weather people broadcasting on both radio and TV commonly using the term normal in a way that I think is incorrect. They seem to equate it to average.
Oh.
We hear temperatures are above or below normal, or winds are above or below normal.
Uh-huh.
Normal normally means within a normal distribution.
Uh-huh.
It doesn't mean average. And I'd like to know if your guest agrees with me and what we can do about this.
Oh, I agree with you. But as for what we can do about it, probably nothing.
Well, we can talk about it on this program.
We can. But it's true. And that's more of a mathematical problem. But I've noticed that not only people in broadcasting, but also print journalists wildly misuse numbers. Mean, median, average, all those sorts of things, percentages. They'll say something is 300% less than it was last year. Well, that is not possible.
Right.
Those sorts of things. Or he did something 8 times less than the other guy. Not possible. Things like that. It's innumeracy, it's often called. It's like illiteracy, only it has to do with numbers and mathematical properties. So
not in defense of journalists, but mm-hmm. but I think that this is a problem among the general populace as well.
Yes.
Not just a journalist problem.
Yeah,
it just happens
come
that
from the general populace.
Right.
But when they emerge from the general populace,
they should be able to get it right.
Yes, they need to educate themselves about this stuff.
Well, and they could be educating the public if they used it more correctly.
Yes, they would.
Well, Dave,
thanks a lot
for your call. We can start that campaign. And Dave from Norwalk gave us a call back. Hi, Dave.
Hey, yeah, thanks for answering my question about Zephyr. My other question is about a word called Willowa, which is a type of coastal wind I experienced off the coast of Labrador, which is a straight line shear wind. And I always just thought it was a native word, and it mentions it in Bowditch, but I don't know the origin of it.
Do you know how it's spelled?
Willowa? Yeah, can you spell it?
No, heck no. I'm dyslexic. But it's pretty much like it sounds, Willowa.
Oh, actually, here's something. I did find it. Willowa. It's spelled Willowaw. American Heritage calls it a violent gust of cold wind blowing seaward from a mountainous coast, especially in the Straits of Magellan, or it can be used to mean any sudden gust of wind or squall. But it says the origin is unknown.
Huh.
So.
Okay, well, thank you so much.
You're welcome.
All right, thanks a lot for your call, Dave, and that's a new one on me. So spell it for me again, Pat.
It's Willowaw.
Okay.
Willowaw.
All right. Well, it's always good to learn something new.
It's interesting. Even though we live in the 21st century, there are many words whose origins we can't account for. And we may fill in some gaps along the way, but I think there are always going to be some unknowns.
Definitely.
Yeah.
And let's talk about some other weather words. And, of course, you're welcome to join our conversation, 866-780-9100. Tweet us at IPR Talk, or you can also send email to talkofiowa@iowapublicradio.org. And a word that I grew up sort of taking for granted, but it took me a long time to learn the origin or learn the meaning of the word, because I grew up as a Cyclone fan.
Oh,
and
yeah.
At some point someone told me, well, that's like a tornado, but not quite.
Right. Well, it is sort of like a tornado in the circular business. We mentioned hurricane before. Hurricane is basically a tropical cyclone. Now, the word cyclone comes from Greek. Anytime you see a word that has cyclo in it, it probably comes from Greek, in which the kyklos means a circle or a wheel. But cyclone comes from Greek. It was invented only in the 19th century, though, using a Greek root, kyklon, which means moving in a circle or whirling around. So even though cyclones had been observed before the 19th century, they weren't really named cyclones until the 19th century.
I'm curious about why we differentiated. I mean, if cyclone, the word, predated our use of the word tornado, I wonder why cyclone didn't grow to encompass tornadoes.
I'm not sure that cyclone predated tornado. But I think that generally tornadoes are associated with thunderstorms, whereas I believe, and I may be mistaken in this, I believe that cyclones can be like dust storms with no attendant rain. Now, I hope there are meteorologists listening who will correct me if that's wrong, but I don't know that you necessarily have to have thunderstorms along with a cyclone.
Okay. Paul is on the line now from Mason City at 866-780-9100. Hi, Paul.
Hi. I just calling in for a little grammar therapy. My whole life I have been harnessed with answering the phone, and somebody say, "Call, is this Paul?" or calling for Paul, and I'll say, "This is he."
Mm-hmm.
And I'm not sure. I have no idea
right.
why I say it that way.
Not...
But it sounds right to me, and I know it doesn't. But it doesn't sound right exactly. It does. It sounds wrong too.
It sounds a little too formal, doesn't it?
Yes,
well,
yeah.
This is the thing. There's an old rule of English grammar that with the verb to be, when there's an object, you don't treat it in the objective case, you treat it in the nominative case, which is I, he, she, they. So you say, that is he, it is I, it is we, instead of it is us. Now, this seems a little stiff, actually, and there's a good reason for that. It's kind of unnatural. That old English rule was promulgated by people who felt that English should be more like Latin. It's perfectly normal in a Germanic language like English to use the objective case and say, it's me, that's him, that was them, and so on. So there you have it. It's an old, quaint rule of English grammar that you use I after is. But you shouldn't feel at all hindered in using me if you prefer, or saying, that's him.
Okay, and what about if I say, and why did, you know, is this is he, is that the same construction then too?
Yes, yes.
Okay, all right.
Anytime the verb is to be, like, is, was, are, they are they. they were they. So it sounds a little bit stiff, and the reason is that it's not really natural English.
So Paul, have you experimented with other things, like just saying this is or that's me?
You could just say speaking.
Right.
My grandmother was an English teacher, and I think that she inculcated that into me. And so I've been, but people, I know that people, when they hear it, I mean, it's just the way I was taught to do it. You know, and when people mm-hmm. hear it, though, I can tell there's a pause or sometimes, you know.
Yeah,
so it's great to hear the derivation of that, and I appreciate it. Thanks
right.
a lot.
Well, in a lot of cases, if if following one of those old rules of English makes you sound stiff and awkward, chances are that old rule of English is a Latinism that was imposed on English and never quite fit.
Okay.
Same is true of not ending a sentence with a preposition, not splitting an infinitive. Those are all rules of Latin grammar that were imposed on English.
All right, Paul, thanks a lot for your call. And we want to try to slip Tony in here before the break. Hi, Tony. What's your question? Tony, are you still with us? We were concerned about his phone line, so I think
we lost him.
Yep, he was looking for a definition of typhoon.
Typhoon, that's a good one. I didn't think to research that, but I should have. I know that it's tropical. Let me look, and it probably comes from an Indian or other tropical language.
Well, conveniently, we have a break here, Pat, so I'll give you time to look it up, and we'll talk about it when we get back in just a moment. My guest is Patricia O'Connor. She is the author of Woe Is I and a number of other best-selling books about the English language. You can read a lot about the English language at her website, grammarphobia.com, and have your answer or your questions answered there. But of course, you can have your questions answered here as well. Give us a call, 866-780-9100. You can tweet us at IPR Talk. You can also send email to talkofiowa@iowapublicradio.org. This is Talk of Iowa. It's Talk of Iowa from Iowa Public Radio. I'm Charity Nebbe. My guest is Patricia O'Connor. She is an English language expert and author of a number of best-selling books. She's also the proprietress of grammarphobia.com. And Pat, right before the break, we were talking about the word typhoon. What did you find out?
Well, it actually comes from Greek, typhon, and originally it was typhon in the 16th century, T-I-P-H-O-N, but the spelling and pronunciation were influenced by Chinese. The Greek word typhon meant whirlwind, and in Chinese, Cantonese, the word typhoon meant a great wind. So that it's sort of a combination of the Greek and the Cantonese.
All right. But
there are similar words in Arabic, in Hindi, Urdu, all those Eastern languages, because we're talking about a tropical cyclone in the Western Pacific or the Indian Ocean.
We've been talking about all of these different major storms. How about a basic storm? What's the origin of the word storm?
Oh, storm, yeah. That's a very, very old word, as you might imagine. It may date as far as the early 700s. It was recorded in Beowulf. It comes from Germanic sources. It's probably related to a word in Old Icelandic and Old Norse, stir, the same word that gives us the English word stir to mean a disturbance or to stir something. So stir and storm are related. Both come from the same source.
Okay, so we're stirring the air.
Yes, it's a disturbance. Yes.
All right. We have a number of callers on the line. Brian is on the line from Cedar Rapids. Hi, Brian.
Hello.
Hi, what's your question?
I spent a few years in Colorado, and we had a different name for straight-line winds that came down the mountain called Chinook.
Oh, yes, Chinook. Let's see. That's an Indian word, I believe. And I don't know if it's exactly the same. I think a Chinook wind can be more gentler than a derecho, but let me see if I can find it here in the dictionary, find exactly where it comes from. Chinook, it's a moist, warm wind blowing from the sea in coastal regions of the Pacific, or a warm, dry wind that descends from the eastern slopes of the Rocky Mountains, thus causing a rapid rise in temperature. So it doesn't sound like the Chinook is the kind that would rip up barns and telephone poles and turn them into kindling wood like a derecho would. But, yeah, the Chinook, let me see if it says what it comes from. After, yes, Yeah, it's a weather spoken by the Indians in western Washington, the Chehalis language.
Well, Brian, okay. Thanks a lot for your call.
Thank you.
And next up, we've got, this one's off the weather subject, Sam on the line in Chelsea. Hi, Sam.
Oh, hi, Charity. Thanks for taking my call.
What's your question?
Oh, my question has to do with the word text, the pronunciation of the past tense. Is it texted or texted?
I think it's texted.
Okay.
Yeah,
that settles it for you, Sam, or do you have a bigger question there?
Oh, no, that settles it. It just sounds better to me if it's just like a D sound at the end rather than text it, like two syllables. So I guess I'll have to change the way I say it now.
Well, you know, don't take my word for it. Let me just check here.
Okay.
Because this is an emerging language here with texting. Let me see the verb to text. To send a message, she texted me. Yeah. It says the verb that means to send a text message.
Okay.
The past tense is texted.
All right. I'll start pronouncing it that way then.
All right. Thanks a lot for your call, Sam.
Bye.
Bye-bye. Back to the subject of weather. Alan's on the line in Davenport. Hi, Alan. Alan, are you there?
Yes, I am here. Can you hear me?
Yes.
Okay. Very good. About 30 years ago, when I was younger years, we always referred to the tsunami as a tidal wave. And I'm wondering how tsunami got adopted as now the word that we use and how tidal wave kind of diminished away.
Well, you're right that it became, it came from that term tidal wave. And you're talking about now how it's become a general term for a big disruption or something non-weather related?
Tidal wave is actually the little small wave that comes into like a bay. When the tide goes up, you see the little tiny tidal wave. But it's no way a tsunami, which generated an earthquake or a volcano or some geological activity.
Oh, so you're not talking about the general use of it in the non-weather?
Well, when I was a kid, I always heard the term tidal wave, and it was used in those terms in the geological activity.
Well, not all tidal waves are tsunamis.
Yes.
But
I'm wondering how did tsunami come into play?
Okay, let me just look here. I know I've done a blog item about this, and while I'm looking it up, I can tell you that if you go to my website at grammarphobia.com, you can find a lot of this stuff by doing a search within my blog, but also you can send me questions if you want. So
the I agree with you though, Alan. I remember as a kid, you know, like we would pretend that there was a tsunami and we'd yell tidal wave, so it just has come into common usage. But isn't tsunami a much better word? It's so
it
much more evocative.
A very large ocean wave caused by an underwater earthquake or volcanic eruption. It's from Japanese tsu, meaning harbor, and nami, meaning wave, so called because tsunamis generally pass unnoticed on the open sea. They're really noticed when they hit a harbor. So not all tidal waves, I guess, are caused by underwater earthquakes or volcanic eruptions, but this is a kind of wave that's caused by an underwater. So
and
maybe it's not tidal.
Or maybe
not unrelated to the tides.
I wonder if it's just that we have adopted the Japanese word.
We have adopted the Japanese word, yeah.
And then maybe that happened within our lifetimes, Alan.
Yes, I agree.
I do like it better.
But
yes,
he's right that it does have a specific meaning. It's not any big wave. It's one caused by some underwater disruption in the ocean floor.
So we're being more precise as well. All right, Alan, thanks a lot for your call. Dave is on the line next from West Des Moines. Hi, Dave.
Hey. I often hear the word, you know, heat index, and I was just wondering if is it supposed to be the heat indices or the heat index? Is there any difference?
Well, index has two plural forms. You can say indexes or indices.
Uh-huh. Uh-huh.
This often happens with words that come from Latin or Greek, that we give them Latin or Greek endings originally in the plural. So we might originally have said indices for the plural of index. But over time, these plurals get anglicized, and it's quite normal to say indexes now. Just like it's quite normal to say gymnasiums, curriculums, memorandums, instead of gymnasia, curricula, memoranda, and so on. So, yeah, indexes or indices, either one is correct, but I think indexes is a little more natural.
Okay, thanks.
All right, thanks a lot for your call, Dave. Next up, let's go to Eric on the line in Vinton. Hi, Eric.
Hello, how are you?
Good. What would you like to talk about?
Well, we've got a TV station in Cedar Rapids that does a fun little segment. It's called a Weatherwise Question, and they're always asking about names of clouds, and it's just a hoot to watch the anchors try to figure out, and I marvel at the ability of the meteorologists to remember all the names, Cirrus, and where do all those come from?
Well, most of them seem to have Latin-sounding names. Like, I know that one of them is the Latin for mare's tails, but I can't remember which one. But yeah, cumulonimbus and nimbus and cirrus and all those things.
There
they usually come from Latin. I know there are lots of them, well, and you have to be a meteorologist to remember them all. I remember studying them in school, but gee, if we remembered everything we learned in school, wouldn't we be brilliant?
That's right. Well, thank you very much.
You're welcome.
All right, Eric, thanks a lot for your call. And Andrew in Iowa City has something to add on the subject of Willawa.
Yeah, hi. It was just 2 days ago, Gore Vidal died, mm-hmm. and he had named his first novel Willawa.
Ah.
And he had served in the Aleutian Islands during World War II in the Navy, and there was an Aleutian or Eskimo word, he says.
Hmm. Well, the American Heritage says the origin is unknown. Now, he may be right, and maybe the editors of the dictionary haven't caught up with him.
Yeah, we just can't ask him, can we?
No.
Yeah, no. It sounds to me more like Maori, like it comes from Australia or New Zealand, but what do I know? It sounds like billabong or
yeah.
Wadi, those words. So, I don't know. He may be right. He was a pretty smart guy.
Thanks a lot for your call, Andrew. And let's hit a couple more of these basic weather words before we run out of time,
oh,
Pat.
Yeah.
How
I
about
want to talk about thunder.
Okay, let's talk about thunder.
Because thunder is an interesting word. It developed from a word in Old English, thunor. It originally didn't have a D sound. And this resembles similar words in very old Germanic languages like Old Frisian, Old Saxon, Middle Dutch, Old High German. But the Old English thunor was related to the Old Icelandic word Thor, which was the name of the god of thunder, which had an earlier poetic form, thunar. So in old Icelandic sagas, you might hear the god of thunder referred to as thunar.
Interesting. How about lightning?
Lightning is a 13th century word, and it's pretty literal in its origin. It means to make light, to lighten. So when you talk about lightning, you're talking about the lightening of the sky. It lightens. It brightens.
It certainly does.
Yeah.
How about rain?
Rain is also very ancient. From old Germanic sources, it was first recorded in the 800s, more than 1,000 years ago, and it comes from old Germanic for drops. And the word rain check, however, is 19th century American. It originally meant a ticket for later use that was given to a spectator at an event that was rained out. So that's how rain check got its term. And it wasn't until the 1950s that it became a general term for just, you know, give me another
chance
opportunity.
At that, right.
Yeah, let's take a rain check on lunch, that kind of thing.
Interesting. We've got a couple more calls, not on weather-related issues, but still some fun topics to discuss. Carol's on the line from Vinton. Hi, Carol.
Hi. I have a question. I was reading a novel that took place during the 17th century, mm-hmm. and I came across the word cuckold, and I thought, what fun to have you describe where that word came from.
It comes from the word cock, like a rooster. Now, I've done a blog item about that one, too, and it escapes me at the moment. But just hold on a second, and I'll check. But I know that a cuckold was supposedly a rooster that had horny protuberances on the spurs of his feet. I don't want to get any more specific, or I will... Charity will cut me off here. but it has to do with roosters. Wait, let me cuckold. Okay, the husband of an unfaithful wife. It comes from, let's see, oh, from cuckoo. I'm sorry. Because the female cuckoo changes mates frequently and lays her eggs in the nests of other birds. To make a cuckold of someone was to make a cuckoo of somebody in that regard. But the term horns of a cuckold comes from a term in roosters where they got horny protuberances on their feet that they use for fighting. So that's where horns of a cuckold comes from.
Oh, right. Thank you. That was so much fun.
Carol, thanks a lot for your call. And Oscar's on the line in Mason City. Hi, Oscar.
Hi. Just wondering what the difference is in historic and historical. Oftentimes I would say Pearl Harbor was a historic event.
Mm-hmm.
Other people will say it was a historical event, which I've always had trouble with that.
Yeah, I think you're right. Something that is historic has a place in history. Something that is historical just has to do with history.
Okay.
So if you say that's a historical old house, it has to do with history, but it doesn't have a place in history.
Okay.
So there is a subtle difference.
All right. Thanks.
All right, welcome. Oscar. Thanks a lot for your call. And there's one weather word that we had on the list that we haven't gotten to yet, and that's hail.
Yes. Those small round pieces of ice. That also goes back very far. It was first recorded around the year 750, and it was in Old English, it was spelled H-A-E-G-L. And over time, the gull part dropped out, and it just became hail.
I think we did discuss on the show once the terminology for different sizes of hail.
Oh, yeah. I think I used to work at the Des Moines Register, and when I was an editor there, we had a lot of fun with hailstorms and how to describe the hail. And it was either described in terms of sporting equipment or fruit. It was baseball-sized or golf-ball-sized, or else it was grape-sized, or maybe grapefruit. But I don't know if we had any grapefruit-sized while I was there.
and did you have a guide for that, or was that just something you liked to make up?
No, nothing officially round. But once it got to golf-ball-sized, then it switched to sporting equipment.
Definitely.
Earlier than that, it was mostly fruit.
Or vegetables. I have pea size hail is certainly.
Pea. Oh, exactly. You're right. I forgot about peas.
All right. Well, Pat, thank you so much for being on the show today.
You're welcome. My pleasure.
Patricia O'Connor is the best-selling author of a number of books about the English language, including Woe Is I. You can find her work also online at grammarphobia.com. And if you didn't get to ask your question today, you can also submit a question on the website, grammarphobia.com. Talk of Iowa is produced by Dennis Reese and Catherine Perkins. Our executive producer is Jeff Schmidt. Podcasting and on-demand audio of Talk of Iowa are available at iowapublicradio.org. Our theme music was composed and performed by the River Monks. I'm Charity Nebbe. Tomorrow is Horticulture Day. We're going to talk about oak trees with DNR District Forester Mark Vitosh. Talk of Iowa is a production of Iowa Public Radio News.